Welcome to Advisor Radio from Horse's Mouth. I'm Sean Bailey, Editor-in-Chief, and today's segment is What's Working Now. We interview advisors who have offered us some insights into tactics and activities that are helping them succeed. And our guest today is Joe Johnson, an advisor from Riverside, Illinois. Joe's going to talk to us about really how he's developed a philosophy over the years of treating his clients like family, so much so that he's even gone on cruises with them, and he does other things in the community and for his clients. And we're just going to talk about Joe's philosophy. But before we do that, Joe, welcome. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your business? How long you've been an advisor, what your background is, how you got started, all that sort of stuff.
Well, it's been a long time, that's for sure. I got my license in the middle 80s. Before that, I was in the insurance business, insuring mostly restaurants, taverns, and bad drivers. And if you're calling on restaurants and taverns all day, you meet a lot of bad drivers. So there was really there was great synergy, and you know, we laugh and everything, but really, a guy who's sitting in the bar at noon, he's a bad driver. I could just tell you already. So it was a great way to build a business, but then I decided that I really enjoyed the aspect of being a financial advisor, the many aspects of being a financial advisor. So I sold the insurance business, started in the investment business, and it's been a great
moment. Hang on for a second, Joe, because I know you told me a story about your father. Your family story kind of influenced you.
Sure. Yeah, so my
is this the right time to say that or to talk about that?
Sure.
Or is it coming a little late? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so my great-grandfather, and father were all in the insurance business. And so I didn't know there was anything else to do but sell insurance. And my dad was good about it, too. He told me that I could do whatever I wanted for a career, that I could sell whatever kind of insurance I wanted. So that's how I got into the insurance business, and it made sense to me to use products that not everybody could find, not other agents. And so that's how I got into the liquor liability business for restaurants and taverns and met all my bad drivers. That's how I got in there. And we have had people. I had a gentleman on his 66th birthday was sitting at my desk and said to me, he said, "You know what I was doing 50 years ago today?" And I said, "John, I have no idea." And he said, "I was sitting at your dad's desk. I had just bought a car and I was buying car insurance from your dad." And that sort of hit home that we are a multi-generational family in the community, and that these people that have entrusted their faith in us truly are extended family.
Good. Now, I sort of recall a story about your father passing away and your mother having an involvement with some financial advisors.
Yeah,
does that fit into the picture here?
Yeah, so she ran into a couple, lack of a better term, a snake oil salesman. And I was still in the insurance business, and they just took advantage of her. You know, my mom didn't know the difference between a high yielding bond or a AA corporate paper. I mean, she just she wasn't sophisticated. And of course, if you ask people, "Hey, do you want high yield?" Eh, who doesn't? Everyone wants a high yield. Do you want junk bonds? Eh, they don't want junk bonds. They want high yield. Well, as we know, it's the same thing. And they just did. They took advantage of her, and it cost her a lot of money.
And how did that impact you?
I wasn't going to let that happen again. I wasn't going to let that happen to anybody's mother or sister or, daughters and anything. It just wasn't fair. You know, my mom, I used to make fun of her that she would say that she can't be out of money. She still has checks left. She was not a sophisticated investor, and it came back to hurt us or hurt her. And I made a promise to myself that I would never let that happen to anyone I came in contact with.
So you made the transition from insurance into more full service. Well, tell us what did you become?
Well, so it started with life insurance. You know, we were pretty much property and casualty insurance guys. And some of our clients had a need, and went the way of Universal Life. I was one of the first agents in the state of Illinois for Hutton Life. Remember the old E.F. Hutton, the brokerage right. firm, bought Life of California, rebranded it, and I was using their life insurance products for my restaurant owners and my tavern owners. And then when the laws changed a little bit, you had DEFRA and TEFRA and a couple other different changes, and it didn't make it as lucrative for the client to purchase the Universal Life. So they said, well, what should we do with our money? And so I, you know, just stayed a chapter ahead of them in the CFP manual and said, oh, we need to diversify. We need some mutual funds. And it was, the next step, and then they took a next step, and pretty sure soon I just didn't have time for the insurance business. I had to focus all my time and energies on the investment business, the asset management.
Right, right. So that has developed over the years, and, you know, so how would you describe what your practice is now in terms of number of clients, number of households, and that sort of thing?
So I have 350 households, about 100, just a little shy of 150 million in assets under management. I'm not 100% fee-based because there's just times where, you know, if someone needs a bond, I don't feel comfortable charging 1% a year to hold on to their bond for them. I don't think that's cost-effective right. for them. So I still do have some commission business, but primarily I'm all managed money, all fee-based.
So as you started to make this transition, as you moved forward in time, you had this audience of clients.
So if I could tell you my sure. proudest moment, I was the I was in retail production. I was asked by my employer, who had bought my business, take a executive role, and I ended up being the president of the wealth management division of a local bank here in Chicago. And that went real, real well until, like so many other things in our industry, it didn't. And so the bank got tied up in some bad loans in 2008. The FDIC came in, and I was unceremoniously let go along with the rest of the wealth management staff. Mm-hmm. And when the new bank came in. So here I'd been out of production, and I had two kids in college, two kids right behind them. So I was, you know, too young to retire, and I didn't know what else to do. And fortunately, I decided to get back into the retail end of our business. And in the first 2 years, I raised $100 million in assets under management. And that was primarily all fee-based business. And then from there, I just reduced my hours of working. And I felt I had that I could have a pretty comfortable income and maybe not work quite as much.
So that's pretty good to raise that amount in just a couple of years. What were your primary tactics that you employed to, you know, go from zero to $100 million fairly quickly?
All right. So the first thing I did, and you're gonna like this part. So the first thing I did is I subscribed to Horse's Mouth, and I kid you not. I mean, it sounds really easy to say that right now, but there were a couple other coaching and personal development companies, and I hired three. I hired you guys, and two others, and I did everything that you guys said to do. And whether it was, you know, marketing to centers of influence, putting on workshops and seminars and, time management exercises and did all these things. And it's amazing if you do what you're told by somebody who's already done it, how really relatively easy it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't invent anything. I mean, I didn't invent the internet, although that helped my success.
Sure.
But I just did what people said I should do to become successful, and it worked.
So at some point then, you ramped up fairly quickly, you realized that, you know, you need to have a philosophy about how you're going to treat your clients. So tell us about, you know, how did you develop that? What were the key epiphanies around it?
All right. So if we go back to the lessons I learned for the treatment my mom received, and I wasn't going to let that happen to anybody else. And I would do things like if we had a bad snowstorm with a lot of snow, I would call my clients, especially the women that were by themselves, and said, "Hey, you know, do you need eggs and butter or milk or anything? Or has anyone done your driveway? And if not, I'd find some kid, give him 15, 20 bucks, and say, 'Here, go shovel out this driveway.'" And it's just trying to remember the golden rule.
Sure.
And,
right.
And that's what I would do. More than one time, I threw the snowblower in the back of the SUV and just pulled up and spent 20, 30 minutes on a driveway.
You're in somebody's driveway, huh?
Yeah, just drive and go away. And I never lost any of those clients. Never talked about performance. They never said that. They never looked at their statement. Well, I'm sure they looked at their statements, but there was never a complaint about their statement.
What other things developed over the years in terms of you must have realized I got to put on some client events or you're doing. So let's talk a little bit about your education. What sort of education, what kind of education workshops were you putting on?
All right. So that was my first, first activity is I would do the workshops. I found a local restaurant that had a smorgasbord because it was a low cost per plate. And then as the revenue started coming in, we changed that to doing it at the local country club, local golf club. And I would do seminars. It was, the timing was perfect for uncertainty with all that was going on in 2008 and the market and the recession and this thing and the other thing. And I used to do a radio show. And the radio show, the idea was to get people to come out to the seminars. And it worked. It was very successful. We followed up. We didn't have account minimums. We didn't talk about, that account's not going to be profitable. It wasn't the point. The point was to help these people, to hold their hand, to be their guide through the upheaval of 2008 and part of 2009.
And your workshops were on what topics?
I used to call them investing in uncertain times, but we would hit on tax aspects, trying to, whether it was do some stuff with some munis or defer some income. We would talk about simple concepts like dollar cost averaging. Stuff that we've been hearing for years. I used to like the Ebbetson chart and, these columns here are doing much better than these down here. But what if you need money for, to buy a car and the market's down? Okay. Well, how do you manage around that? Well, the way to manage it is the cliche of you fix the roof when the sun's out. And so we try to plan those events that we know are going to happen. We just don't know when they're going to happen. And we were prepared for them. So those were the kind of topics.
Right. More investment oriented. Yeah.
Correct.
And so then as you built up your book, different advisors have different approaches to their business. And, it's not uncommon to find advisors who, develop friendships among their clients. But, you and I have had opportunity to be in Hawaii and speak more broadly about what's going on in your business. And I recall you telling me you really like to think of your clients, as part of your extended family. So so we mentioned obviously, helping people with the snow and all that stuff. But what other ways has that manifested itself?
All right. So here was the epiphany on this one. One day I'm realizing that I'm buying a lot of chicken dinners for people who I don't even know in the form of the seminars.
Right.
And if I'm feeding these people that I don't know, maybe I should feed people who my friends know.
Uh-huh.
rather than just, solving world hunger for the senior community, why don't I, feed people that I know and I like, and their friends. So what we did is instead of having public workshops, we started having workshops with clients and their friends and their guests, and let them bring somebody who they thought might be interested. And if they weren't interested, then don't bring them. Just come for dinner yourself. Mm-hmm. And from that, it's grown into now instead of having workshops, although your tax workshop is so effective that we're incorporating four of those this year. Other than that, in fact, I'm coming out to Scottsdale in a few weeks to attend the
one-day with Debbie.
The one-day tax law. But anyway, so how that's evolved is now every August we have a comedy night. And we promote it as we laugh at hunger. But what we've done is, we got great comedians in Chicago, professionals that are playing clubs like Zany's and Second City and these sort of places. So I hire one of them. And anybody who wants to come, I just put the news out to the community. The only thing I ask is that they bring a bag of groceries. And we take the groceries and we give them to a local food bank. I get a couple wholesalers together, and they pick up the beer and wine and, pizza, salads, light stuff. And we have a comedian come and entertain. And actually, last year I got on stage and I told two jokes, which I'll spare that. I'll spare you those.
No. You know them. This is your chance.
No. Maybe that's another day.
But all right, we'll try it out there at Scottsdale.
We'll see. Maybe by the end of the call, maybe I'll have loosened up a little bit. So, this comedian, Larry Reeb, is the guy's name. And he's been on, Carson and Rodney Dangerfield and, the Comedy Store with Norm Crosby. I mean, he's the guy's really a talent. And then he brings on a new guy with him to, give that guy a chance to, get in front of the crowd. And we just had great success. We filled up a van full of food and an envelope full of cash.
Wow.
So now, all of a sudden, instead of, getting up there and showing pie charts and, talking about the bell curve and coefficients and all that kind of stuff, we're up there laughing and helping the community. And it's a great event. And people talk about it. People are calling me already and saying, when's it going to be? I want to make sure I'm in town.
Good.
So that's one. Another thing, there's a boat club. Think of it like a timeshare of boats. So if there's a boat in the marina with this organization, I can go grab it anytime, and all I have to do is pay for gas. So we've started doing these boating outings. And again, we'll bring clients, and if they have a friend they want to bring along, fantastic. If they don't, just come on, you can meet some of my other clients. And we spend the day going down the Chicago River, looking at the skyline and, pointing out different buildings. We can go out into the lake and go past the museums. And there's an outdoor concert venue that if there's a big act playing that night, that act will be rehearsing in the day. So you just sit sit out there and, listen to the likes of anywhere from Pitbull, who I got to say, I wasn't a big fan. I'm not a Pitbull fan. But then some of the aging rockers, like the guys from the Lovin' Spoonfuls and the Rascals, and people just like it. I mean, it's fun stuff, and other advisors aren't doing it.
Right, and you said that this boat club, what's the official name of it?
It's called the Freedom Boat Club.
And you were saying you could go to another city, like you were visiting some clients out in the Seattle area. And again,
In Seattle, you can take a boat out in Puget Sound. You can go to Lake Washington. If you're in New York on Long Island, they have a location. South Carolina, I've done three different ones there. And then in Florida, I've probably done four or five. And what I'll do, so if I have a client that lives in Florida, or they're snowbirds, then I'll say, okay, so when are you going to be down there? All right, let's go for a boat ride on this day. And you want to bring some friends with? And they go, sure. And then we meet at the marina. We go for a boat ride. And you really get to know people. Okay,
yeah.
So not only, you know, are you talking and you know, they want to retire at 65 and they're going to take their Social Security at 70. I mean, that's all good stuff, and you need to know that stuff. But I can tell you about their kids. I can tell you what their dog's name is. I can tell you about them planning the wedding reception for the daughter.
Right.
I mean, I can tell you so many more things that you don't learn in a 45-minute conversation.
You're totally right. I mean, and we say over and over again, it's like, especially during hard times, but it's just good in general. You know, you take a few couples out to dinner, have them bring their friends, and when you're sitting around and you're relaxed, you're having a meal, you're having some wine or something, and you're talking about what you did on vacation last year or what your plans are for this summer and all that kind of stuff, it just like allows for kind of connections that are, like you said, you know, vastly deeper than discussing a pie chart.
Sure. And when anyone talks about going to Hawaii now, I consider myself a mini expert. And
sure.
You know, I have friends that clients that live on the Big Island, and I go visit them every year. And I could tell you all about Kauai. I have a couple of clients who vacation there the same time when we do. So we end up, you know, golfing and going out for dinner. And now I get to know the wife a little bit better, and she can put a name with a face, and they meet my wife and
right.
See what a wonderful woman she is. And then they get the assurance that, well, she's a wonderful woman and she likes him. He must be a good guy.
Right.
I don't know if that really works that way, but.
Well, you know. Yeah. Okay. Tell me about the fact that you are vacationing with your clients. How did that happen?
So I told this one guy that we were going to Hawaii, and he said, oh, I've always wanted to go. Where are you going? I told him. He goes, oh, mind if we tag along? I said, sure, come on along. And he did, and we got to know each other better, and he's given me a couple referrals since, and we're like brothers. I mean, we're just really tight. The wives get along real well, and so we've actually spent time in Hawaii 3 times now with that guy.
Wow, nice. But you've also gone other places too, right?
Well, we did the New York. So Steely Dan takes residency at the Beacon Theater in October.
Right.
So,
right.
I used the kind of Platinum American Express card, and they'll get you tickets for anything. And you know they're good. So I went through them, took care of the hotel, and I wasn't able to pay the way. You know, FINRA has their... their rules, but they weren't looking for me to pay. They just the fact that I set it up and they got to do this great experience to see Steely Dan 3 nights straight. they'll never forget that.
I
was able to get. I don't know if you're familiar with Joe Jackson, the part of the second wave or the new wave, whatever they used to call that in the 80s. He was in Chicago,
yeah, right.
And I was able to get an opera box. And
nice.
Bring two couples, and everyone is happy, and I met, you know, made 2 new friends. Yeah, and now I'm friends with the other ones, and you know, we're talking, and I'm pretty sure that they'll be opening up an account in the near future.
And you have plans? Something was that you that had plans to go with clients to Alaska this summer?
Yeah, so that's our summer. Yeah, I got a list. So we'll hit that in a second. So besides the boat club, a year ago we had a cruise. My broker dealer's home office is in St. Petersburg, and so we did a cruise out of Tampa. Everyone came in the day before. We went and we toured the home office, and we looked at the art collection of the firm's founder. And again, they loved it. And it was, you know, they got the chance to kick the tires and real that, you know, it's a real company with real people.
Right.
So from that one the relationships on that one, so tight, that we decided we're going to do a cruise to Alaska. So on August 2nd, we're all flying to Seattle and getting on the ship, going to go on a little cruise, and we're trying to set up a tour of the Boeing Museum that's on the Boeing campus. Do that the day before, have a little reception. I think there's, I want to say there's either 15, I think there's 15 people that are coming that aren't clients out of 40.
Wow. Oh, you have a 40 group people, a 40 people group. Wow.
There's now some of them are, you know, extended family members of other people that are coming.
Right.
But, there's 40, there's going to be 40 of us.
Excellent. And we want to point out that you've got a super person in the back office who loves doing this kind of thing in terms of acting as travel agent.
Yeah. Emily just does a wonderful job, and her assistant, Yolanda. And between the two of them, I'll take them over any travel agent. They know how to squeeze a nickel.
Right. And obviously, you found that traveling just deepens the relationships and extends you into networks of other people, who some of whom may become a client at some point down the road. That's good.
Sure. So for instance, your program in Scottsdale. So I'm going to do that. I think it's the 12th, and then on the 13th, I have a client out in Scottsdale. So I'm taking him and two of his golfing buddies with, and we're all the four of us are going to go play golf.
Nice.
And so I'll have met two more guys that are affluent, like to have fun.
Sure.
Mutual interest.
Good. Now, under this heading of clients as extended family, you told me an interesting story about somebody who had no place to go for Thanksgiving. Yet you weren't even putting on Thanksgiving yourself, I think.
Well, we did. We ended up doing it. We ended up having Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Actually, it was my brother-in-law who was hosting that year.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, not that I don't want to say anything disparaging about my brother-in-law, but I was so much happier that I had my client with to talk to than my brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And my wife's family is just a large, traditional Italian family. So their doors are always open.
Yeah.
To bring somebody else in. Poor Henry has since passed away, but he was a good man, and I was happy to have him come over for Thanksgiving.
So there's one other thing I want to talk about. You told me something about a book you're working on, about a letter to your daughter or something like that. What's that all about?
All right, so I started writing a letter to my daughters so that they didn't find themselves in the same position my mom was in. Both have great husbands. You know, I like my son-in-laws. But you just never know if you know, the early deaths, you know, things happen that are unprocessed. And I want them to be prepared. So I started writing the letter. And pretty soon, the letter turned into a chapter. And then it turned into a book. So I have a book that's going to be coming out. And it's I don't have the exact title yet. I'm still working on that. But it's basically a father's instructions to his daughters. On how to put themselves on the course for financial independence. And what I'm going to do is, once I'm done, you know, all my buddies at the golf club that have daughters, I'm going to give them one. So here, you know, this is just something I put together for my daughters. I know you got one or two or whatever. You know, maybe you should, give this to your daughter or your daughter-in-law, and they might find it helpful. You know, there's no selling. There's no arm twisting. There's no anything. But then they'll ask questions. You know, come on in. I'd love to help you.
Yeah. Well, when the book is done, maybe we should just do a whole, you know, I'd love to read it and, you know, kind of have a more extended conversation with you about it. You know, but for now, that's good. So, Joe, if there's anybody who's thinking of like, yeah, you know, this is good stuff. I should be more embracing of my clients. And is there any bit of other advice or warnings that you would issue? Obviously, you think it's a good idea, but any other tips or insights, anything?
All right. So have retirement dinners. So when you have a client who's going to be retiring, throw them a retirement dinner. Let them pick the restaurant, and even if it's a couple hundred dollars a head restaurant, just to ask them to who does he want to bring? You know, you've got some neighbors, you got some coworkers, you got an old boss, you got anyone you want. You want to bring your kids. And, you know, so you fill up a table of 10 and literally throw a retirement dinner. And with all of these things, I think the most important part is don't try to sell anything. Just, I mean, if they ask you a question, they want to know about the market or, you know, should they buy an ETF or an open-end mutual fund or whatever, you know, just say, hey, you know, I'd love to answer that. You know, here's my number. Give me a call. But today, this is all about Sean or whoever the guest of honor is. And just immediately change the subject. People want what they can't have.
Right.
and if you're not going to talk about it, you know, they'll come back to you.
Yeah.
Plus it's the right thing to do.
I mean, right. No, you don't want to get into that kind of conversation there.
No, I mean, it's because it is about the retiree, or it is about the people that are on the cruise, or the overnight trips, the golf thing, and you try to think on your feet. So, I knew I wanted when I heard about that conference in Scottsdale in Hawaii, I knew I wanted to be there. All right, how do I justify it? Well, here, I can do that one day. I can go see these clients who I promised to. See, the other thing is, if my clients are out of state or if they're going to be moving out of state, I always tell them, you know, when you move out of state, whether you consider this good or bad, I'm going to come visit you, and I'm going to get out there. And it's brought me to New Mexico. It's brought me to Arizona. Right. It's brought me to California, Seattle, Florida. Right after I go to that conference in Arizona, I'm heading to New Orleans, and I got some great folks down there. I'm going to go meet and they're family. I mean, it just they become family.
I like that, Joe. I like it a lot, and it worked for you. Hats off to you.
Well, thank you,
Joe. Thanks for talking with us.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Joe Johnson, an advisor from Riverside, Illinois, who's been telling us about what's working now for his business. My name is Sean Bailey, editor-in-chief at Horse's Mouth. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Horse's Mouth's Advisor Radio Podcast. Don't miss a single episode. You can subscribe on Apple iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. And send your comments to podcast@horsesmouth.com.